College. She travels worldwide teaching Krishna consciousness. She is the author of Krishna Meditations,
of course, Kriya Dharma,
Essence Seekers, Dr. Bess, Learn to Read.
Which was written here! At New Varshana.
Wow. This is an 83-book literacy program, and also the book, The Great Mantra for Mystic Meditation. Please join me in welcoming Irmila Devi.
I'm going to try to say this without bursting into tears, but I'm going to burst into tears. I'd like to dedicate these classes to Prana. So, I just got to see him. We went to his place in Vrindavan, and he went to our place in Govardhan. It's really, he was the one who convinced Kalasambara to put me up here and to put up with me here in New Varshana so that we could produce the Learn to Read and gave the facility with the school. And before that, he had come to North Carolina. He spent 6 months in North Carolina as part of our curriculum development team. Very, very close and very dear friend. In one sense, and his journey is not a sad one for him, but it's a very sad one for us. So I'd like to dedicate this to him and it's really my gratitude to him that I got to spend so much time here and got so much wonderful association with so many of you. So, sorry. I'll try to behave like a civilized human being here. Okay, so this is January 2nd, 2024, yes? In New Varshana in Auckland, New Zealand. Can all of you see the screen from there?
Yeah.
Okay, because if you can't, you can move over more. And this is in five parts, although we're going to just have four sessions. So we're combining parts two and three tomorrow. So today is going to be part one, which is about prosperity types. Probably a different way of thinking about career than you've ever thought of it before. Parts two and three, which we'll be doing tomorrow. And where are we? Where are we doing it tomorrow? Okay, so you all know better than I do where we're doing it tomorrow. So that'll be looking at the four fields, the definition of the four fields, and probably a little different way than you've thought of it before. And then the temperaments of the people in the four fields. And then the next day, we'll be looking at what happens if you do someone else's work. And that for my co-author, Dr. Ruchira Datta, who's her initiated name is Rukmini, but that's not my god sister Rukmini. Different Rukmini. She and I feel that one, what happens if you do someone else's work, was the most eye-opening, and as one of my granddaughters would say, mind-blowing. Looks where we really understand how intelligent Krishna is for devising this system of dividing work. And then we skip a day, and then we'll be doing the... Where are we doing the overview? Part 5? At the loft? Okay, so that'll be, I guess, Saturday?
Yes.
Evening, yeah. So Saturday evening, we'll be doing that at the loft. So that's an overview where we'll be... Brief, we're basically summarizing the whole book. Okay. And as we go through here, I will be letting you know which chapters in the book I'm covering, if you want to read that before or after a class. And also, especially for today's and tomorrow's classes, there are exercises in the back of the book. Now, what I did in Govardhan Eco Village was I actually had a special part of the class set aside for those people who had the book and did the exercises in the book to work with each other and go deeper into the topic. All right, ready? So what is the topic that Prabhupada talks about a lot, writes about a lot, says he wants to do, that it's part of our mission and nobody knows what in the world it is? What is that? Yes, there you got it. Now, by the way, if you'd like more information about When our audiobook comes out, we do have the book as an ebook on Amazon, but if you'd like more information about our audiobook, or I am working on a full online course with Bhaktivedanta College in Radhadesh, if you just sign up there, you will not get an email confirmation from us because we're just Rukmini and myself, but you will be on our list and you will be updated. So one of the top questions that I've gotten in my many years of traveling the world is, how do I balance my material and spiritual life? And my response to that is always, well, what are you doing having a material life? And people think, like Arjuna thought, well, this means I have to go to, you know, the Himalayas or maybe sit on the bank of Radhakund and just chant all day long. But the message of our Shastras is how to spiritualize your life, your work, your family, your work, everything, so that everything merges into transcendence. So this is what we're going to do these next few days, is we're going to learn and implement, learn and begin to implement the 9 principles of career dharma system, so that you're well on your way to achieving deeply satisfying career success and harmonious balance between your career and spiritual life. And what we'll be doing, you'll be identifying your ideal career field and prosperity type, progress toward dharmic mastery, and learn the secrets of making your work deeply meaningful. You'll start applying the principles of devotional living to your career, and your career will thus enthuse your spiritual practices with deep meaning and taste. I mean, just imagine that. Imagine that your daily life was filled with all the activities that you've always wanted to do. You love the work you're doing, you love what you're contributing, you love how you're making a meaningful contribution, and your work gives you the type of prosperity that enriches you and that you joyfully share with others. Now I'd like you to imagine that the whole world is like that. My personal conviction is that if you go up to most people in the world and say, would you like to love God? I mean, I have this conviction from doing book distribution. Here's a book about loving God. And people were just like, and that's her. What to speak of, you say, would you like to love a God who's a little blue cowherd boy? I think the demand would be even slightly less. But if you go to most people in the world and say, how would you like to have a career that's the best expression of yourself? Well, you're really adding to something that's beyond yourself. You feel a real sense of purpose and meaning in your work. And you have the kind of prosperity that enriches you and that you would joyfully share with others. Now, my guess is that the vast majority of people in the world, except for maybe some hardened criminals, would be on board with that. And say, yes, that's actually something that I would like to do. So I see this as the main natural bridge to bhakti. Because you can't have all of that without bhakti. In some form. And in some way. But of course, Srila Prabhupada wanted us not only to bring this to the world, but also for ourselves. So what we're going to be going over here is identifying our ideal career field and prosperity type. Now, for most people, that's their primary interest. You know, what's my nature? Is that enough? No. One has to go beyond that to learn the secrets of making one's work deeply meaningful. And beyond that, to progress to dharmic mastery. And then we'll also look at the whole system for peace and prosperity. So these 4 main areas encompass 9 principles of career dharma. Now, Rukmini and I became convinced that one of the main reasons that Varnashram hasn't been implemented is that people were looking at details and not principles. And details are always changing, not even just from one yuga to the next, right? Just like at that wedding, right, there was a dispute over a chess match. I remember reading about that. Somebody got murdered, and this the wedding goes on, and Prabhupada said this kind of behavior was not uncommon among Kshatriyas. And if you think, remember Bhakti Chumara saying to me, you know, we're not going to bring back battles at weddings. I mean, it was just maybe, what, 150 years ago, that if you had a duel with somebody, it wasn't a crime? We had, I think, some American president that had a duel with somebody. Nobody was charged with a crime because that was, you know. So these things change. Those sort of details are always shifting. But the principles remain. So why don't we read these together? Number one, connecting our nature, everybody, connecting our nature with our livelihood. Two, advancing through life while nourishing our nature. Three, extending our prosperity to others. Four, ethical and meaningful work of value. Five, delight in cherishing our prosperity and field of work. Six, having celebrations of the sacred in our life and work. Seven, above the shades of ego. Eight, maintaining societal balance, cooperation between the fields and competition within the fields. Nine, all-inclusive, sustainable prosperity. So in today's class, I'm just going to be talking about a small part of principle number one. Tomorrow we'll discuss another part of principle number one and some of principle number two. And then the next class on Thursday, we'll discuss a part of principle number four. And then only on Saturday, we'll talk about all nine principles, briefly. All right? Children are welcome, as long as they're not screaming. Prabhupada said, all glories to the assembled devotees includes the children. So Krishna says that we cannot repress our nature. We have a particular nature, however we have it, wherever it came from. We have a particular nature that cannot be repressed. It cannot be changed. And whatever that nature is can lead to perfection. Actually, I was just listening. It's funny. I'm listening in order to Prabhupada's lectures on the Bhagavad Gita right now, and the one I turned on today, Srila Prabhupada said, so today is the disappearance day of my spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati. And I'm like, well, that's cool. That was just yesterday here. And then he was talking in that class about how all the parts of the body are needed. And he said, we don't want just an arm. We don't want just a heart. We want everything. And we want variety. And Krishna wants variety. And everyone can be perfect in their own work. So I didn't have time to bring that quote into the presentation, but I was thinking, wow, that's exactly the point. Sometimes we think that we should just be a society of floating heads or something like that. You know, we need every type of person, every type of mentality. Okay, so we're going to look here at six ways to be rich and prosperous. Again, this is an identifying my prosperity type and career field. And this class, we're just going to look at prosperity type. This is connecting our nature with our livelihood. So I think a lot of people, maybe most people, when they think of their career, they think in terms of money. What's going to make the most money? How can I make... And I can't count how many people have said, well, you know, this is what I'd like to do, but I can't make enough money doing it. And we have this concept that prosperity means money. All right, so I have a couple questions for you. So I want to know, have you ever met, heard of, known anybody who didn't have a whole lot of money, but they had a happy, rich life? You ever heard, met, who he has ever heard of, met, encountered such a person? They don't have a lot of money, but they have a rich life. About half of you. Okay. How many of you have ever heard of, met anyone who has a lot of money, but they have an unhappy life, and they have actually a poor life? Okay, most of you. If you haven't, just open any news source and read any headline, and you'll find some rich person who has an impoverished life. But many times we're thinking like this, if I could just make enough money, then I would have a rich life. All right, so if all of you, I hope, have something to write on and write with, if you just have a phone in your finger, that'll work. And if you could please write down, what makes you feel rich and prosperous? Now, not just what you're grateful for, like clean water or fresh air, which you have abundance of here in New Zealand. But what may, and not specific people or specific animals, not like a specific certain, not like my wife or my cow. But what makes you feel rich and prosperous? Okay, now I'd like you to pick one of those and expand it a bit, write one or two sentences about them. For example, what one thing that really enriches me is art. So I like to have beautiful pictures on my walls. I have some prints, although one devotee in Indonesia is now going to send me an original oil painting he made of Srila Prabhupada, so I'm going to have original oil painting on my walls. So I like to have beautiful art on my walls. I like to produce books that have art, like our Krishna Meditations book there, or the, if you've seen the Learn to Read, all the art we had in there, or Manashiksha. And I like supporting artists. I like engaging them and supporting them and giving them facility. I like using artwork in presentations. So if you can, that's just an example I'm giving for myself. So if you can write one or two sentences about one of those things and in what ways it enriches your life or how you use it. All right, so we're going to be looking at six ways the Shastra talks about being prosperous. And as we go through these, I'm going to ask each time for you to think about when you've had this in your work, when you haven't had it, how do you feel when you have it, and how do you feel when you don't have it. So our first one is Aishwarya. So Aishwarya, you want to sit where you can see the screen too, Hardy. Can you see the screen from there? You can't? The first one, Aishwarya, comes from what Sanskrit word?
Ishwar.
Ishwar, controller. So Prabhupada often just says wealth for this. But Ishwar ultimately means that you're a controller. So this is the kind of prosperity where you have particularly positional authority. You have a title of authority. And there's other people that you're managing and administering. So it can be in a variety of situations, a variety of projects, a variety of settings. But any time where you're actually engaging and managing other people. So I met, there was one devotee I met in Croatia who's has a business, and he says, I don't like so much just like working on the sales floor or ordering the supplies, but I really like running the business and engaging other people and managing things. One devotee that I met in Belgium told me that, she said, I used to be into marketing and sales, but now what I'm doing is I'm managing teams of people who are managing teams of people who are managing teams, and I'm helping other people become successful. And I said, well, how many people are you managing? And she said, 50,000. She was saying that doing this sort of work makes her feel very enriched. Now, this is something I personally struggled with a lot because, you know, in the Hare Krishna movement, we're told that we're also supposed to be, you know, really humble and simple, and especially that we shouldn't want to be controllers. That's like a bad word in the Hare Krishna. And so I was always trying to be not a leader. I was always trying to not lead. And I'd always find myself leading. And I would think, well, maybe what I really should do is just make garlands. And this was an ongoing internal monologue. I shouldn't be leading. I should just be making garlands. I should just be making garlands. So I was one time by the Mira Road Temple in India for Balaram's appearance day. And I walk in the temple room as they're preparing for the festival, and there were these three women making garlands. And I'm like, oh, wow, I have an opportunity to make garlands, right? So I go over there and I ask if I could help. And none of them spoke English. So the temple president's wife was there, and she told them I wanted to make garlands, and they were all going, Anglaise, which means foreigner, you know. And the temple president's wife said, you know how to make garlands? And I'm like, yeah. And then she was telling them in Hindi, but I could understand enough that she was basically telling them that I was a senior devotee, Prabhupada disciple, and they had to let me make garlands whether they wanted to or not, which made me feel not exactly very comfortable. So anyway, they had me sit down, and I'm watching them, and they had a different technique. Instead of a needle, nothing easy. Instead of a needle, they were tying the flowers together. So I'm kind of like, so I'm watching them, and then they give me the stuff, and I'm doing it, you know, and all the time they're looking at me. You know, and they're looking at me, I'm lazy, I'm like, oh my God. Anyways, I finally finished this garland, and I get up, I'm like, and I start walking away, and I walk like 3 steps, and they just tore the whole thing apart. And then I was like, okay, Krishna, I guess I should lead instead of making garlands. But I still wasn't fully convinced that that wasn't absolute total Maya, right? So fast forward a few years, and one devotee was getting his master's degree in psychology, and he was doing this personality style quiz, and he asked us to participate to help him get data for his research. So we all did, and then he would go over the results afterwards with us. So he met with each of us, and he met with me, and he said, Urmila, you cannot not lead. I'm like, oh, no. And then I accepted it. I thought, well, my whole life I've been trying to not lead, and I always end up leading anyway. So I was like, you cannot not lead. And then I realized how enriching this is for me. How much it gives me a great deal of happiness and satisfaction to be engaging and coordinating people in various projects. You know, like with the Learn to Read here, it started out with just me down in the unit, you call them, right? That always sounds so factory to me. I live in a unit. Anyway, down at the unit, all by myself, watching the Pukiko birds. And the tides go in and out, and it ended up being 200 people internationally. And how satisfying that was, working with all those people, doing translation work and audio work and the illustrators in China and bringing that all together and making it all happen, and how satisfying that I felt that to be. Now, on the other hand, there are many people who really don't want this as part of their work. There are many people who prefer to work alone, or they prefer to work as part of a team and let someone else take that responsibility. It's not something that enriches them, and in fact, it may be something that if they have it at their work, they feel drained and depleted. Why do I have to take this kind of responsibility? So I'd like you to think of times that you've had this as part of your work, or of those that you haven't yet worked, when you've had this in any way as part of your life, and when you haven't had it, how do you feel when you have it? How do you feel when you don't have it? When I say, how do you feel? Like, what happens in your life? How do you feel internally, and what kind of things happen in your life when you have it, and what happens when you don't have it? For example, I know someone who does not like this, but is often pushed into these positions. Actually, I was just recently talking to somebody like that, you know, who got pushed into a position of leadership and really doesn't like it. Again, we're talking about administrative leadership here. And she said to me, you know, I'm not sleeping well, and I keep coming down with fevers. And so it's not just how you feel, like, do you feel, woo? but how does it affect your life? How does it affect you as a person? Does it make you feel enriched, or does it make you feel impoverished? Okay, if you could write something, again, on if you have a paper, or if you have a phone, or okay, now we're going to go on to Gyan. So Gyan means knowledge, and some of us have careers, work to do, where we're constantly needing to learn as part of our work. But basically, you can't do the work unless you're constantly gaining in information and knowledge and understanding. So, for example, I know one devotee who's an eye doctor, and she told me that every week she has to read at least 3 articles in her discipline in order to keep current with the field, in order to do her work properly. And she actually didn't like that. She said, I wish I didn't have to do that. I wish I didn't have to keep studying constantly. I met a teacher like that once as well. I was giving in-service training in Vrindavan to the teachers there in the schools. It was a combined group of several schools. And one of the teachers said, you know, I've been teaching for 25 years. Why do I need to keep coming and getting in service training? So some people really don't want that as part of their work. Right? Or even I talked to one guru who said, you know, I have disciples who are full-time pujaris, and they're like, why do I need to learn slokas? And then there are other people who really love having gyan as part of their work. They love it if their work requires a lot of extra study, a lot of extra research, and constantly gaining new knowledge. And if they have work that doesn't demand that of them, then they feel impoverished. They feel bored. They feel like they're not being challenged. So again, I'd like you to think, when have you had work that where gaining gyan was part of your work? When have you had work that wasn't like that? How do you feel? And when I'm talking about feelings, I'm not just talking about emotions. What was the effect on your internal self, your life, when you have gyan as part of your work? And what's the effect on you when you don't? Okay, we're going to go on to virya. So virya is strength and health. And there are a lot of jobs that require physicality as part of the job. Like one devotee I talked to in Germany who works with construction told me that one thing that he really loves about his work is that he gets a physical workout. And he said, you know, if he can't work for a few days, then he feels physically restless, that I really want to be getting some physical work. My daughter's a Bharatanatyam dance teacher, and every time she teaches a class, she's getting a full workout. One devotee I met in Belgium told me how she loved working at the Goshala because she says, well, I have to walk there and back, and then I'm dealing with the cows, and it's very physically demanding work, and I really enjoy that. Now, virya might not just be physical exercise, but it might be some kind of work that's involving healthy eating or healthy medicine. Now, by the way, you could have jobs where you give this to others, but you're not getting it yourself. Like, I know of some medical doctors who make other people healthy, but their work sure doesn't make them healthy. Right? They work terrible hours. I was once at a doctor's office where I walked past, like, their cafeteria room, and there was a vending machine full of garbage food. And food is a kind way of talking about that stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, I have these medical people, and they're eating this rubbish, you know? So this is not just what you're giving to others, but what are you getting from your work? Now again, there are some of us that really want this as part of our work. Now my own work does not involve this, and I find it annoying when it does. You know, I want to go for a nice walk outside of my work. You know, just me and my beads and the trees, and I don't want it as part of my work. So again, some of us find that we really need virya in our work in order to feel enriched, and some of us really don't want it as part of our work. So if you can think of, when did I have virya as part of my work? When did I not have it? How did I feel when I have it? How do I feel when I don't have it?
Or you mean physical?
Health. Virya particularly is health, which of course can be physical exercise, or something where your work itself is making you healthier, where your work is contributing to your health or strength. Now, occasionally this might be able to be applicable to mental strength, as in people teaching certain disciplines of yoga and things of that nature. But particularly when it's contributing to your health and strength, your vitality, on a physical level. But at the temple where I ended up getting stuck in when the world shut down a few years ago, you know? I was there to visit my family. My granddaughter and her husband had just had their second baby, so I was there to visit them, and all of a sudden all the doors of the world closed. And my only house was in India, and I didn't have any place to go. So I ended up staying there for a while. So at one point I was weeding one of the gardens at the temple, and I put out a thing on the WhatsApp group, you know, I need some help weeding for Janmashtami, would people come and help? And the people who came and helped, they were all like men in their 20s and 30s. And after 10 minutes, they were exhausted working in the garden. and I was working for an hour and a half. I'm like, what's wrong with you guys? And they're like, we're all IT people, you know? We just... I couldn't do anything. I was just like, I was just shocked, you know? Like, you're males, and you're in your 20s and 30s, and I'm an old female, and I can work in the garden for like 10 times longer than you. Oh, my arms are really... I was like, at least you got to go get some exercise out of it. But this is about how do you feel when you have that. You know, are you feeling like, I don't want to sit in front of the computer, I want to do something. Or are you happy to do that kind of work, and you'll, you know, take your walks in the afternoon, please. I'm like that. I don't like work that involves a lot of physicality. So we all need to do things for health, but what do you want as part of your work? Okay, now we're going to go on to Shri. So Shri means beauty. It really literally means kind of sparkly, glittery, effulgent things. So Shri can refer to visual beauty, photography, painting. It can refer to auditory beauty, like music. It can refer to olfactory beauty, working a lot with perfumes and oils and incense of different fragrance. It can refer to beauty of charismatic leadership, which is a little different from positional leadership. So you can be a positional leader and admin without really being a charismatic leader, and you can be a charismatic leader without doing practically any administrative work. Does this make sense to everybody?
Like an influencer.
You can, yeah, like an influencer who doesn't have any position at all. Or even, you know, a lot of people who are motivational speakers or musicians, or they may have a lot of charismatic leadership, but they don't actually manage anybody. And then there are people who do a lot of administration and management, but they don't really take a role as an inspirational leader, so to speak. So those two things don't necessarily have to go together. They can. Aishwarya and Shri can go together. They can, but they don't necessarily. So think of any aspect of Shri, visual beauty, auditory beauty, olfactory beauty, or charismatic leadership. And it can also be beauty of nature. So a tree can be any one of those things. It doesn't have to be all of those things. Now, for myself, Shri is extremely important to me. Basically, if I don't have Shri, I find it difficult to function. It's not just that I feel impoverished. I actually find it difficult to function. Now, my work does not naturally contain any Shri at all. But I'm able to add it. Like I'm thinking of Kalasambhara, who's always taking his beautiful pictures. You know, he's added Shri to his service. He's created the Shri in his service. Of course, he has, you know, beautiful property here at Nivarshana also. But just as I said, I put all these pictures in my books. You know, I produce books. I mean, Kriya Dharma doesn't have a lot of illustrations. But most of my books are richly illustrated. Or am I creating these PowerPoints? When I'm working, I often play music. Or, you know, as part of my puja, I'm kind of an oil connoisseur. So I get, you know, really... One of my friends posted something about oils the other day on social media, and I was thinking, nah, that's also not good. So, you know, to really give beautiful fragrances to the Lord, and I love to create beautiful flowers. And one of the things for me as a traveler is that I'm constantly staying in other people's space. That's actually the main austerity for me to travel. After that would be dealing with airports, security lines, and that kind of thing. But I mean, I'm always in someone else's space, so I don't have control over the Shri aspect. You follow? And, you know, I can't bring my pictures to put on their walls. It's like, that's not going to work. So sometimes I stay in places that are very beautiful, sometimes not, because Shri is not equally important to everybody. And so what I learned to do is just like set up my altar someplace and make that place beautiful. And then psychologically, that's my home. And that way I'm okay. You know, and sometimes that's a real challenge. Sometimes that's a good challenge. Sometimes I have to put my deities on somebody else's altar, and yeah, it's like some people are like that, and some people are not. I don't have to say that politely. And so sometimes it's definitely a challenge. But I have found that if it's not already part of my work and part of my environment, if I don't generate it, I just can't function. It's like I'm not eating or something. So for me, that's extremely important. I was talking to you about my daughter, who's a Bharatanatyam teacher, so she has a lot of Shri in her life. You know, the music, the dance itself, the costumes, and so forth, is a very... She's also runs a Gurukula, she's a Gurukula teacher, and she's able there to make the school very beautiful and have a lot of beautiful things in it. Now, I find there's other people for whom this is not important at all, and in fact, they see it as an annoyance. So I know a lot of people who consider this stuff to be just, why do I have to bother? You know, they don't mind necessarily if things are beautiful, but they certainly don't want to spend any time and energy doing it that way. And if they're compelled to, they just say, well, this, you know, why can't we just do what's practical? Right? I was teaching this in one school in India. I was teaching it in their temple room. And I'm looking around and I thought, whoever sets this place up doesn't like Shri as part of their work. Just, you know, things were put in places that were practical, you know, easily accessible, but not beautiful. I thought, for this person, Shri is an annoyance. Just have things so that they work. Yeah? So I'd like you again to think about, when you have any of these forms of Shri, visual beauty, auditory, olfactory, nature, or charismatic leadership, any of those, when you have any of them as part of your work, or when your work doesn't have any of them, or maybe there's a particular one that you particularly like and not the others. And again, what happens in your life? How do you feel when you have it? How do you feel when you don't have it? Making a good impression. For people who don't like Shri, it's just not even in the equation. For people to whom Shri is not very important, it's just not in the equation. One of the challenges for me as a teacher of these things is to be absolutely neutral. I'm not neutral. I have my own preferences. And to explain these with absolute neutrality is hard. It's hard. I'm constantly like checking myself. For people who don't like Shri, it's not part of making a good impression at all. Their good impression is, do things work? Are they practical?
You're talking about the Kali Yuga, right?
Yes.
So in my career as a sales, I have to make a good impression.
As a what?
As a sales, in the sales.
As in sales. What are you selling?
I sell insurance, life insurance.
Insurance. What does that have to do with Shri? Nothing.
To be presentable to a client.
Well, that's a little different. Like Prabhupada said, dress for others and eat for yourself. That's a little different. But, yeah, that there's... I don't see how Shri would factor into your career unless if it was important to you, you'd have to add it.
Well, it is important in the career. You make a good impression to the client.
But we're talking about a good impression.
Sorry?
What do you mean by a good impression?
Generating a good vibe, you know.
Well, how does that relate to Shri? I'm confused.
This is what I'm confused with.
I don't think it does. No, I don't think it does. I mean, if Shri was important to you and you have that work, you might add that in some way. I mean, maybe you would devise beautiful, you get some program to devise beautiful emails or something like that. There might be some way that you would add it if it was something that was very important to you that you felt difficult to function without. But it's not intrinsically part of your career. Like, tree's not intrinsically part of my career at all. I could be a teacher and a speaker and a writer and not have anything to do. I mean, it has something to do in terms of charismatic leadership, but I know a lot of teachers who aren't charismatic at all. And they're perfectly good teachers, they're just a different kind of teacher. I mean, I was in my travels, there was also one of my godbrothers there who's a leader in our society and lovely, lovely, lovely person who definitely has responsible roles but is not a charismatic leader at all in any way, shape, or form. So he's able to do his service without that. So yeah, I could probably do all of my service without that. But I can't live without it. I just can't. So I'm, by Krishna's grace, I'm able, and I have always been able, to bring that in and make it part of what I'm doing. Yes?
Could you bring any of them to what you're doing?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, if you had a career that didn't involve Gyan, and you were constantly learning, you might simply irritate other people around you. I mean, you might have to do it in your outside of work hours, for example. You know, somebody say, what are you doing? Well, I'm studying, I'm researching. Well, you're not supposed to, you're supposed to be doing this. Why are you researching? And it's pretty hard to create positional leadership if you're not a positional leader. Then people are just going to consider that you're bossing people around and you're stepping out of your area. So, yeah. I mean, how many times can you leave your desk to work out during the day or something? You know? So, no, I don't think so. You know, to some extent, you may be able to bring some of these into the work if it doesn't have it, but to a large extent, that's not really possible. Unless you can craft your own work. Did you all get a chance to write something about Sri? Yes? Okay. So now we're going to go on to Yasha. So Yasha means fame. Yasha is a person. Yasha in the Bhagavatam is the child of Kirti and Dharma. So Kirti means to talk about. It's related to the word kirtan. Now if you just have Kirti, you may be fame. People may be talking about you for any reason. But Yasha means they're talking about you for dharmic reasons. They're talking about you because you're actually doing things that are valuable and things that are good and things that are authentic. So the satisfaction of Yasha really implies community. There's not much satisfaction from Yasha if all you have is the charismatic leadership of Sri. You know, if you think about people who are, they're just an on-stage presence as a charismatic leadership, but they don't really have people who are giving them encouragement and admiration and acknowledgement on a regular basis in their life. So we talk about those people as famous people, but that's much more Kirti. Do you follow kind of the difference? Yasha is Kirti and Dharma. And it really implies community, a team, a group of people that are doing similar work and working with you where you're helping and acknowledging each other. And you're supporting each other. So for many people, this is very important in their work. I know some people who can't work without it. That there are people who, if you just ask them to get a job done on their own, nothing will get accomplished. But if they're working with a team, they become very productive. And our oldest son is a software engineer at Microsoft. And he, of course, you know, during the pandemic, he was working remotely like everybody else. But he said one of the things he really missed was going into work and working with his team. He said, we just get so much energy and ideas and inspiration and encouragement from each other. And also, the Yasha means being part of an atmosphere where people are doing this. When I was recently in Malaysia, they had a big like acknowledgement program for their youth and their youth leaders. You know, maybe 300 or 400 devotees, and they're bringing people up and giving them awards. And And for a lot of people, this is not only nourishing, but it's actually important. Now, this is something I really don't like at all. So, like, I had to be at that acknowledgement dinner, and I had to be at the front of the room the whole time, which means I can't leave early even if I wanted to. And, you know, they're asking me to give people awards, and the whole time I'm thinking, hey, I'm going to go back to my room. Get me out of here. So this is not my food. It's really just not my food. I like working as part of a team, but I like working as part of a team where we're almost entirely focused on the work. And we're not, you know, my emotions and relationships, I want separate. I don't want it as part of work. I really bothers me. And if you all think I'm a demon for that, sorry, that's just how I'm wired. But for some people, this is really their nourishment, and for other people, it's just like, it's a botheration. Each of these types of prosperity is like that. Some of us are going to find it's like air for us, that if we don't have it as part of our work, we feel completely impoverished. Others of us, for each of these, are going to say, I really don't want this. And then some of us are somewhere in the middle. We're like, well, if I have it, I have it, but it's not so important to me, or I prefer to have it, but I can do without it. So I'd like you to think again, just think how I know was in teaching this in Switzerland, and one of the managers of one of the organizers of the program came up to me afterwards and said, I never realized how important Yasha is to me in my work. So it was like a whole revelation. So I'd like you to think of when you've had this as part of your work, when you haven't had it, how do you feel when you have it, how do you feel when you don't have it? Yes.
So is this working in teams and the fame that comes about through working in teams?
Or some kind of community, some teams or community or group. And, you know, there are some schools, for example, where the teachers each do their own work and don't do a lot of things together at all. And then there are other schools where the teachers really work a lot as a community. They share their work with each other. They really give a lot of encouragement to each other. And a lot of recognition. Like, for a large number of people, getting some kind of recognition or acknowledgement in their work is crucial to feeling job satisfaction. So however that's done, whether it means you're working in a team or not, but there's some kind of community that's forming in your work. You may not be working in teams with people doing exactly the same work, but maybe the whole office you're in, or the whole business, or you work a lot with other people doing similar types of work that acknowledge each other. It isn't, like for me, I'm happy working in a team if it's just about the work. And it's not so much the personal aspect. But this is where you're working with people where there's this large degree of a personal aspect. Can you understand the difference? Yes? Yeah?
Can you expand a bit on Dharma? What do you mean by dharma?
Dharma is a funny word.
How does it
mean? I mean, Prabhupada talks about dharma as meaning that's which is the most authentic essence of something. Like he'll say the dharma of sugar is sweetness, and the dharma of chili is spiciness. Which reminds me, when I was in Indonesia, this rice was so hot. And I asked the cook, did you put any chili in here? No, chili. I said, did you put in some spices that had chili ground with it? No, some kind of masala? No. What did you put in the rice? Well, I put in a tomato and then a big chili. She said, I thought it was like a vegetable. And I'm so like, oh. So Prabhupada would talk about that's the authentic essence of something. So dharma is kind of like that. Dharma is what's real, what's good, what's truthful, and what's the authentic essence of something. So when people are talking, kirti means to talk about. So you could talk about anybody for anything. Now there's no way you guys over there can see this screen. Can you? Can you see the screen? From there? Wow, okay, that's impressive. So kirti can be talking about anybody for anything. You know, it's, but when you put Kirti together with Dharma, they there's literally a person named Kirti and literally a person named Dharma, and they literally have a child that's named Yasha. It's in the Bhagavatam. So, Yasha is, people are talking, but it's very positive. It's not empty. It's meaningful. Dharma has to do with deep meaning.
So is that the problem, doing good thing for others?
Well, good thing at all. Good thing in your work. I mean, hopefully all your work is doing good things for others, and we'll talk about that more on Saturday. But, yeah, when people are praising you for something genuine, they're not just praising you because they want something from you, or, you know, because you're wearing glittering costumes and jumping around on stage singing songs. You know, it's something very genuine and very authentic. Basically, when your work is involving authentic human interaction where people are praising and acknowledging and admiring each other in that authentic human interaction. It sounds so wonderful, and I'm thinking, really, why don't you like this? But I really don't.
I'm just thinking in a different way.
What were you
thinking? Like being a good thing for a client, and he puts a Google review. Fantastic, awesome.
It could be, yeah. That could be. And especially if that goes on a lot. Like if that's a lot of your work, and if that's a lot of what enriches you in your work. That if that's a lot of what, you know, at the end of the day, you're like, well, I feel really satisfied. And in one sense, that's a community. I mean, it depends how much you interact with the people that you've insured. Like, do you interact with them once just to sell them insurance, and you basically don't interact with them at all? Unless, I don't know what kind of insurance you're selling, but unless they're, I hope it's not life insurance then. It's life insurance. I'm dead now, thanks a lot, it was a good policy.
It's actually death insurance.
No, it's death insurance. They come to you in their dreams, you know. Thank you for taking care of my relatives in my absence.
That's what happens.
Do the relatives thank you?
Well, it's not only the death angel. There are other angels which actually they claim on, and then they just put a Google review on it.
I see, okay. I mean, I could see reviews if you were interacting with those people on a regular basis. But it might be some degree of yasha. Yes?
A couple of things I wanted to mention. So, when you're talking about in your personality, you like when the work is about work, you know, collaboration is about work. So, have you seen in your experience that there are certain cultures where you find that versus in other cultures there is more than work? And if you can maybe talk a little bit about that, based on your...
Instead of basing it on my experience, I'd rather base it on my study of various cultures. And there are definitely different cultures in which that is more or less important in certain situations. So that's also definitely the case. And I'd have to look up, and it's not some... I don't have it here. I have it here, but I don't want to interrupt the slideshow. But I don't have it right here. My grandson who walked out would, because he's right now reading a book on cultural differences. But there are definitely cultures where we're having social interactions as part of the work. But you know, often those are not so genuine. They're more perfunctory, where it's expected as part of the work that you're going to eat dinner with clients, or you're going to, you know. But I'm talking about something that's really genuine, where people are actually praising you and acknowledging you and supporting you. I mean, I really got started on this journey from one, I mean, I actually, he's a devotee in a broad sense. His wife, his late wife, was a very great devotee. He's Muslim. Maybe some of you know Krishna Nandini, my late god sister, Krishna Nandini. So she was married to a Muslim man, lovely gentleman. And he said to me once, Urmila, my wife and I are fabulously wealthy because of the community of supported devotees we have. And that was a as my granddaughter would say, mind blow. I was like, oh, somebody feels wealthy because of their community. Oh, it's a different way of looking at wealth. I mean, I'm thinking also in my travels, I was at a temple once where there was a funeral for one of my god sisters, and hearing everyone talk about her, and I thought, one of the things that I've lost, now I have a place in America the last few years, but I thought one of the things that I've lost by being an itinerant teacher is community. I don't have one. I mean, it really just struck me, you know, how much support this person had, how much support and admiration. And I remember being there in the funeral, and I thought, I don't have that. I don't have a community. And I was like, am I okay with that? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay with that. Fine. Like if you said to me, okay, you're not going to have any more Shri in your life, are you going to be okay with that? I go, no. You fine? But then I'm like, no, I'm fine with that. In fact, I find a lot of, not all of it, but I find a lot of it annoying. Sorry. I am learning to appreciate those who find Shri annoying. I'm really trying. I'm really, really trying. It's like, I mean, they're just wired differently. Okay. Are you wired differently than the Bible? Yes. Is it okay? Yes. Okay. So it's like that I've got people as part of my work who are really there for me.
Second point I think is that, is there, after COVID, have you seen any, because in my work profession, I have seen a lot more importance being put in the community side of things professionally that I do marketing. I just want to see that if you also notice some kind of difference pre-COVID, post-COVID.
Well, I think you found a lot of people who understood their place on this continuum. Because all of a sudden, a tremendous number of people had to work without this at all. And you found a lot of people that went, hey, I like that. And a lot of people who went, this is killing me. This is destroying me. And for there were a lot of people that it had harmful physical effects on them. That all of a sudden being separated from their community support in their work, that they actually suffered physically. Yeah? And again, there were other people who were like, I like this, I'm not going back. So there's definitely people who are like, I'm not going back. So yeah, I think it was a clarifying event, a long event, a weird event. But anyway, it was a clarifying, whatever that kind of thing was. It was clarifying for a lot of us as to where we, how we felt about Yasha in our life. And yet, specifically in our work, how we felt about having Yasha in our work. Did I ask you to write about this already?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay. Anything else on this? Okay, this last one is what many people feel would be an anti-prosperity. And that's Vairagya. I mean, many people think this is the opposite of prosperity. Detachment, equanimity, freedom. Now, in terms of work, the richness of Vairagya is in having a tremendous amount of flexibility. You know, having flexible schedules, being able to travel, being able to have a very minimalist lifestyle, or it can mean having a lot of separation from kind of social, emotional dealings. And there are some of us who really thrive on this in our work. In fact, I've met a number of people for whom this is number one in their priorities of what they want from their work. They want their work to be giving them a lot of freedom, equanimity, and detachment. And then there's a lot of people who really don't want this in their work. So there's people who want to have a regulated schedule, and they're much more interested in security. I mean, I have a really, really good friend who I was just thinking about this the other day. I thought, she's really not into Vairagya. You know, she has a gazillion, billion, million things. And they're all devotional things, but she has got a lot of them. And, you know, when she needs to move from one place to another, it's a... And I remember once saying to her, you know, maybe you could downsize. She says, no. You know, this is my life. This is my opulence, having all of these books and all of these pictures and all this, you know, having all of this. So, again, there's people for whom this is really not palatable and not desired. So it may not be, again, one extreme or another. It may be somewhere on the line. It may be, well, I really prefer having this in my work, but it's not that important. Or I really prefer not having it, but I can deal with it. Okay. So if you can think about, when have you had Vairagya that was an integral part of your work? When have you not had it? How do you feel when you have it? How do you feel when you don't have it? It could be that you'd have some portion of Vairagya or some degree of it, yeah. Again, it's not just a black or white thing. But for each of us, there's going to be one or two of these that we really have to have them full on in our work. And there's probably going to be others that really we kind of prefer not to have to bother with. And others where there's some degree. I mean, even with, say, Aishwarya, are you leading 10 people or 50,000? Is doing administrative leadership all of your work, or is it a part of your work? You follow? Like, for me, it's just a part of my work. Like, I'm the chairperson of the Shastric Advisory Council. But that's, I'm not doing that all day, every day. Do you follow?
Projects and instead of like leaving them aside and going to something completely different
sort of it could be. I mean, think about again how you feel. Does doing that kind of thing give you a sense of detachment and equanimity and freedom? The opposite of this is security. Security, regulation, how would you say? What's the, looking for the opposite word?
Routine.
Yeah, routine, where you kind of know what you're expected to do. That's what, there's a word for that that I can't find at this particular moment.
Predictability,
thank you. Along with my gray hair, not always being able to find a word is one of the... the signs, it's like, oops, what's that word? That would be a lot of the opposite. Or if you have some career where you're dealing a lot with people's emotional stuff, would be the opposite too. So if you have some work where you're not so much dealing with social, emotional things, is another kind of Vairagya. Another kind might be if you have some work that deals a lot with compassion and forgiveness. I mean, we have one of the testimonies in our book is from Rambaru and she writes about her work as a chaplain and how much Vairagya was involved in that work. That she would be dealing regularly with people who are going through horrific experiences. And the only way to deal with that was to have this constant sense of detachment. Yes?
Would you say if somebody has those needs for Vairagya, like the sense of detachment, they could become like healers or counselors? Would they be able to do it, or would that be really hard for them?
So many years ago, I was in, I guess it was Slovenia, it's probably Slovenia, where His Holiness Veer Krishnasamy was teaching a class on nonviolent communication. And basically, because he's my GBC and the guru of my daughter and her daughter and my one of my son's sons, I went just out of politeness, just very honestly. So I went to the part one, it was whatever it was, a week or 10 days session, and oh, it was interesting. You know, and then I happened to be there the next year when he was teaching part two, and after the first day I said, Maharaj, why do you study and teach this? What does it do for you? And he says, it lets me counsel people all day without becoming affected. And then my hunger for it increased about 100 times. And I'm like, okay, I gotta learn this. So I think some people really go into counseling and therapy jobs to get deeply involved in other people's emotions. Which, that isn't my thing, personally. But yeah, you definitely could. I mean, it would probably depend somewhat on the different techniques that you used, which therapeutic techniques you're using, which modalities you're using, what's your healing framework that you're using.
I think it's an interesting one because I think at a certain extent you do need to be attached to the person to a certain extent to really want to help them with that kind of thing, but at the same time, if you're too attached, it can also impact you as well, so you need to...
Well, you're looking at something we'll discuss on Saturday, which is cherishing your prosperity types. And one thing that's important for those people who really relish Vairagya is never to be so detached that you stop caring. If you're so into Vairagya that you lose compassion, then you've polluted your prosperity type. So when we look on Saturday at all of the nine principles, and one of them is basically charity, and one of the things that you can give in charity besides money is you can share with others the prosperity type that you're getting. Then we also look at cherishing your prosperity type in your field of work. And each of these prosperity types has their own integrity. Cherishing your prosperity type is enjoying it as prasadam. Not cherishing your prosperity type is trying to enjoy this bhoga. So if you enjoy Vairagya but you're not compassionate, then you're exploiting Vairagya. But if you actually are seeing it, and I was just hearing Prabhupada say this today, also went to class today, that we should see whatever we're getting as the Lord's prasadam. So with all of these types, if you see that this is the Lord's prasadam, you'll care for it. In Indonesia, they couldn't think of their own Indonesian word for cherish. And I was talking with the translator about how do you cherish, what does it mean? And we got to protection with caring. Okay, so we've looked at all six, and for those of you who have the book, so we have Appendix A on page 499, which is exercises on the richness and fields. And on page 515 are the answers to the richness questions. So we'll go through just one of these right now. And I beg you, those of you who do these exercises at home, this is not your homework, this is your home fun. So those of you who want to do this home fund, I would really suggest that you try to figure it out yourself before you look at the answers. If you just read it and look at the answers, your learning will be half from if you read it and try to figure it out yourself and then look at the answers. Okay, so we'll go through one of these. And again, we're looking at what people are getting from their work, not what they're giving to others. Okay, so we have a whole bunch of them here. We have an air traffic controller, an event planner, a welder, a criminal offense attorney, a translator, a warehouse manager, a volunteer program coordinator, an audiologist, biomedical engineer, park ranger, pipe fitter, bond analyst, property surveyor, youth pastor, choreographer. Let's see, which one should we pick here? Any preference? Anybody have a preference?
Youth pastor.
Youth pastor, all right. So David is a youth pastor. He trains youth volunteers to serve in the church he attends in coordination with parents and other family members. He also counsels the youth in the congregation to help them achieve their spiritual goals. He plans and administers various youth programs, such as retreats and study seminars. He helps with the development and teaching of the Sunday school curriculum. He participates in church staff meetings and helps young people to train for taking up leadership roles in the church and in the congregation. Okay, so why don't you write down what you think are his one or two primary prosperity types. I'll read this one more time. One is primary, and then any secondary. So what is he getting mostly? Might be more than one. And what is he getting somewhat? Okay, I'm going to read this again. David is a youth pastor. He trains youth volunteers to serve in the church he attends in coordination with parents and other family members. Those of you who have the book, it's on page 507, Tom. He also counsels the youth in the congregation to help them achieve their spiritual goals. He plans and administers various youth programs, such as retreats and study seminars. He helps with the development and teaching of the Sunday school curriculum. He participates in church staff meetings and helps young people to train for taking up leadership roles in the church and the congregation. So if you could just write down what you think are his primary and secondary prosperity types. Of a devotee that I know. So he used to work as a traveling musician. He would travel from one place to another, he and his wife, and they would put on musical performances with dancing and lights, and they would write their own music. And he would usually put some philosophy into the lyrics, though he brought me to one of his shows and I couldn't understand any of the lyrics at all. And then he would, you know, they were a small group, and he would unload and reload all the equipment himself. Okay, so what was he getting from his work?
Shri.
Shri, from the music and the lights and the dancing. What else?
Virya.
Virya, from carrying the equipment?
Yes.
Not really much Yesha. I mean, first of all, he didn't really have much of a following, and it was just he and his wife. They didn't have that much of a community. Definitely Vairagya. It was a very minimalist lifestyle, going from one place to another. Okay, so he hasn't worked that job for some years now, and now he works as a guide in national parks in the United States. So he travels from one park to another, and he researches the parks, what's the history of the park, the plant life, the animal life, and then he takes guides up in the park, sometimes for a few hours, sometimes for a day, sometimes it's multi-days with camping. So what is he getting from his work? Virya, definitely. What else? Gyan, yes. More Gyan than from his other work. Aishwarya, no. He has no position of leadership over anyone. Sri, yes, from nature, and Vairagya, yes. So he's getting the same prosperity types. From each work, he's getting Vairagya, Sri, Gyan, and Virya. He's getting a lot more Virya now than he got as a musician, right? And Gyan probably about the same, although in very, very different areas. Yeah. He's really not getting Yasha or Aishwarya from his work. So what's interesting about this kind of analysis is that you can, instead of looking at, well, this is the kind of work I want to do, let me just replicate that. You can look at what types of prosperity type do I want to get. And that way, if you can't work at a particular job anymore, instead of looking for something just like that, you can look at for something that gives you the same prosperity types. Now, a lot of people think, well, I'm just going to make money, and I'm going to use money to buy the kinds of prosperity I enjoy. But these prosperity types are not so interchangeable. Just like if I change U.S. dollars for New Zealand dollars and then change it back to U.S. dollars, what's going to happen? I'm going to lose. So if you try to exchange prosperity types, it doesn't work very well. Or sometimes people think, well, I won't have the prosperity that I enjoy at work, but I'll get that on the weekends or in the afternoons. But we end up not having enough time, isn't it? You know, can you do your hobby every single day and every single weekend? And if you just think about it, you know, if you've got to spend 8-10 hours a day doing something that doesn't enrich you, with the hopes that I'm going to find a few hours here and there to do what really satisfies me, it's not really going to make it. And that's not what Krishna wants. I mean, Krishna wants us to actually be happy. Like he says in chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, this yajna is for living happily and attaining liberation. He wants us to be nourished with the types of happiness that we actually enjoy. This is, of course, a summary. So for those of you who'd like to study more about what we talked about here is chapter 2. So basically what we discussed today is chapter 2. For tomorrow, we'll be discussing chapters 3 and 4. So if you want to prepare and read in advance for tomorrow, it's for chapters 3 and 4. And then Thursdays, we'll be discussing chapters 5 and 6. A little bit tomorrow, we'll also be talking about chapter 7. Yes?
Can we just go back to David for a moment?
You want to go back to Dave? David, yeah. Our...
No, I don't want to go back to David. I'm happy as Krishna, but...
Okay.
when I was doing the exercise, I chose Aishwarya as his... And I'm wondering what I got wrong, because it seems to me there's a lot of organization and projects.
Yeah, he actually probably could have included that as a secondary thing, yeah. Yes?
Are there certain prosperity types which could be completely not possible to work with each other at all? So as an example, let's say...
That you couldn't have both of them in the same work?
Yeah. If somebody likes to earn money, is it possible that that person cannot have one of the other ones?
Well, I think everyone likes to earn money.
Well, like it's quite a...
I mean, I find it hard to think about very many ways of living in 2023 if you don't have some money.
No, what I mean by money is like you want to become really rich. Like, not just sustaining, but, like, you know.
Well, the people who particularly want to greatly increase wealth for society are in a particular field of work, which we'll be talking about tomorrow. Could they also have a prosperity type as of Vairagya? Yeah, they could. There are some people who generate vast amounts of wealth for society. They're not just collecting and redistributing wealth, they're generating vast amounts of wealth for society, and a lot of that may also come through their own hands, but they're very detached people. They have a life of tremendous freedom and tremendous detachment. I mean, I actually personally know some people like that. And I'm just thinking of this one devotee I know. I don't want to be too specific here, but anyway, I can't even say what kind of currency, or it might be obvious who he is, not in this country, who generated so much money and gave so much money to some very important ISKCON projects that, frankly, without the contributions that he made, those projects wouldn't even exist. And he personally, I mean, in order for him to give that much money, I mean, we're talking about something extremely, extremely significant. He must have a lot himself. How could he give it? And you visit him and you'd never know. Never. I mean, you go to his, I've been to his home. I mean, he's comfortable. He's not living in poverty, but you'd think he was maybe touching upper middle, maybe. You couldn't tell by the way he dresses or by the way he lives. But it's like, you're giving that? Oh my God, what you must be having. And, you know, we'll talk about the fields tomorrow. You know, he's been in the business of generating wealth for society. And he loves doing that. Actually, no, two devotees like that. Well, one of them, his own lifestyle is very opulent. But he's a very detached person. Now, although we're all supposed to have vairagya in terms of maya, it's not that everyone needs to lead a minimalist, detached lifestyle. That is not required for advancement of Krishna consciousness. What we need to all have detachment from is thinking, you know, I'm the owner of the world, and I'm the controller of the world, and I'm the Lord, and that everybody should be detached from. But here we're looking at vairagya as an opulence, as a type of wealth. I mean, like for myself, I don't need it to be able to breathe, but I do better with it. I don't suffocate without it. I mean, I have run a school where I had to be there at the same time every day. I had, you know, had to work certain hours every day at a certain time doing certain things. I prefer having a tremendous amount of freedom, but I don't need it to be able to function. And I love living out of one little suitcase. You know, people say, is that all the luggage you have? And I'm like, yep. I wish I had less. But I don't, it's not, like, Shri for me is for me, Gan and Shri are like, I don't have them, I'm going to die. I'm just going to evaporate. I won't exist anymore. Kind of thing. So for me, Gan is at the top of the list, then Shri, then Vairagya. And after that would be Aishwarya. And then after that would be Virya, and after that would be Yasha. That's my personal list. And what I want to do before we end today is do some work with some people's personal lists. Yes?
Is there a degree of opposition between Yasha and Vairagya?
Yes, there are. It's interesting. This is the inner part of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's logo that he created for the Gaudiya Mutt. Oh, if you really want to see the logo, I can give you a much better picture of the whole logo. Any of you who have Manashiksha will have seen this. This is the whole thing. We modernized the printing press in this. Srila Prabhupada put this on the gates of our temple in Mayapur. Somehow the current version of it is missing the six prosperity types. So when I was just in Mayapur down, the stars were vacant, the points of the stars were vacant. I'm like, why did they take that out? Anyway, but this is the way that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur designed the logo. And why did he design them in this order? I mean, Rukmini and I spent quite a lot of time thinking about that, and to what extent are things oppositional. We also spent a lot of time thinking about the relationship to the fields, which we'll talk about tomorrow. That each of the fields generate certain prosperity types for society, but that we'll discuss the fields tomorrow. By the way, I share this PowerPoint with anybody who wants it, so you can take photographs if you want, I don't mind, but if you like the whole PowerPoint, I give it to anyone who wants it. And if you want to take it and teach it, I'd be even happier. Is there any other questions or discussions particularly that you'd like to have about the prosperity types? Anything else anybody would like to bring up? Yes?
So generally when people are starting out in the workforce, trying to find their feet and trying to find what their prosperity types are, we find that you might, if, for instance, Aishwarya, if you're not a leader, but you have a slight propensity, or others may see the propensity in you, and then you're trained to be a leader, though you may not in the beginning appreciate that.
I really like what you're saying. The second half of what we'll talk about tomorrow deals with this kind of thing. I mean, we'll be talking tomorrow about the fields rather than the prosperity types, but it's related to that in the second part. So the first part of what we'll teach tomorrow is the nature of the four fields, which should surprise you. So we'll talk about, I think of that like the containers. And then we'll talk about the nature of people in each of the four fields. And in talking about the nature of the people, we're going to talk about how do you find out what that is. What's the process for finding that out? What's the process for nourishing it? Which is related. The prosperity types give you specificity within the fields. So we'll be talking about that particularly. And that in any type of work, you have three things. You have the information needed to do the work, the skills needed to do the work, and the dharma of the work. Now you can go to so many places in the world and get trained in the information and the skills. Now, a lot of places will talk about ethics, but they'll talk about ethics as if it equally applies to any kind of work, and that's not fun. The Shastra teaches that there's four distinct dharmas for four distinct fields. So what we particularly have to offer the world, we followers of the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavad Purana, Bhagavatam, is what is the dharma. And many times, you may have a dharma that's not, you don't yet know. And unfortunately, this is not only for people just starting to work. This may even be true for people who are 45 years old. I've had a lot of people come to me for personal consultation on this who are in their 40s. I'm like, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I am. That's not uncommon in our present time. So if you don't have a sense of what it is, you may never have gotten trained in it. People will say, well, do what you're good at. Well, how do you know what you're good at? Maybe you were trained in the information or skills of something that's not your dharma. So you're really good at that information and skills, but you're bringing the wrong set of values to it and you're messing it up. Or maybe no one's ever trained you in it. Maybe you have the natural dharma for it, the natural inclination for it, but you never got any training in it, and so you have no idea if you're good in it. Or another alternative, which we'll talk about more tomorrow, is maybe your natural inclination has come out in the wrong way. Like if you're a natural leader, but no one's trained you in it, people may just accuse you of being bossy. You follow? I was giving class once. What do you call that little bit of water between you and Australia? The ditch, yeah. I was giving class across the ditch one time. Between the UK and America, they call it the pond. In the UK, they'll say, those of you Americans across the pond. I'm like, it's a big pond. So those people across, I was giving class, and we will not name the city that it was, across the ditch. So I was giving a class or something, and like, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes into the class, this woman comes in and starts telling everybody where to sit and like restructuring the whole room. And it was so disruptive that I just had to stop, you know. This is going on and on. Finally, she gets everybody where she wants them. And I said, do you have any kind of management role? And she's like, no. I said, would you please get one? So if we have a nature that's not being fulfilled in our work, it will come out in some other way.
Now we can find a way to do that productively, like hopefully I find a productive way to bring Sri into my work. Does that make sense? Sometimes I do it unproductively. I mean, that is a fact. Sometimes I go to temples and I end up saying things to people. Like, why do you have a folding table in your temple room with a bunch of cardboard boxes of books under it? And then I think, I wonder if they'll ever invite me back. Yes?
I suppose it's a whole class in itself how this relates to motherhood.
Okay, how it relates to motherhood in terms of training your children or in terms of being a mother? Today, because it would be premature. I would like to wait until I've taught about the fields, because all I've taught about is the prosperity type. So I'd like to wait until we teach about the fields. We will definitely not have time tomorrow because I'm squeezing two classes into one slot. So we might have time on Thursday or on Saturday. But if you remind me, then I can have a time we're talking about women. And don't we have a Vaishnavi thing here? On Friday. So we'll also get a chance to look on this at this specifically in terms of women on Friday, and I've asked that a paper be distributed to everybody who's coming. The paper that I've asked, and that paper is not just for women, anybody can read the paper. It's the work of a committee in North America, the North American ISKCON leadership. Over many, many months, gathered together devotees from all over, basically United States and Canada. And I was facilitating one group where we took the seven purposes of ISKCON and wrote about each of them as if they were realized in the world. What would they look like? So we have that document that you will get, and I think that will give you some more rounded idea of what would be the roles of women in an ideal society. We talk about this in the 29th chapter, and particularly starting on page 334, we have a whole section about what is the relationship between women and careers, particularly women when they're in their prime of life, married with children. So we specifically talk about that here. So if you want a chance to take a look at that, and maybe if you do come to Friday's program, where we'll get into this more in depth, and then I'd be happy to discuss it on Saturday, like at the end of the, during like the discussion time for people in general. It's something that I feel is a very important thing to discuss. And in a very brief way, I would say that modern life is out of balance for women particularly. And life has been out of balance particularly for women for about the last 200 years. And we have people in our Hare Krishna movement who think that life would be better for women if we went back to 1950. And like, then you got to go back a little further than that. And see what were women doing before the Industrial Revolution, and then find how to make that make sense in 2023. Because I don't think we should go back to 1700 either, nor do I think we could, or anybody would particularly want to. But what were the things that were being done right then, that are discussed in our Shastra, and how could we bring that to the modern time? And I feel very, very fortunate, I mean, really very, for many things, but one of the things I feel very fortunate for is that, we raised three children, and
I didn't have that problem except for very brief periods of time. But I don't want to jump full into, I don't want to jump feet first into that right now. I'd rather do some more background. Anything else anybody would like to discuss on the six ways of being rich? Yes.
Is it significant that one of these prosperity types may be there, or you might hope it's there underneath, but some previous trauma has sort of debilitated it or made it sort of...
Well, that's kind of what I talked about with me and Aishwarya. How, you know, I was resisting being myself. And that such a thing is not uncommon for the prosperity types or the fields. It's actually not uncommon at all. That Krishna says we can't repress our nature. So if I exhibited my nature in an untrained way, I might have exhibited it in a way that wasn't palatable, and therefore I was criticized for it, and therefore I'm hated in myself, and therefore it doesn't manifest in a good way. Or it may have been criticized in general. It may be something that the society that I'm in, my particular family, my particular ethnic environment, or my particular group or whatever, really prioritizes one thing over another, really praises one thing over another, or I may have gone through some very, very particular personal trauma or something. That's not at all uncommon.
So then how would you know if it's a prosperity type that you...
Well, that's why I was trying in this class especially to get people to really be introspective. And I didn't ask people to share, although I'm going to ask one person to share if they will. How do I really feel? What actually happens to me? What do I really do? You know, and you'll see that something that's really important, you'll try to get it. You'll do something to try to get it. Because it's your food. You know? Yeah? It's like... like in Mayapur Dham, you know, there's so many restaurants. We can say to people, there's so many. Like, it's hard. I was there for 2 weeks. I was only supposed to be there for a week, but I ended up being there for two because there was that cyclone in South India. And there's so many restaurants in Mayapur that even in 2 weeks, to eat at each of them is difficult. And then there's free prasadam. I mean, so you can say to people, don't bring your own food. They don't need to. There are so many opportunities. But if you said to people, don't bring your own food, and you didn't provide for them anything, then they would, or they would steal. They'd find some way, because you have to eat. So we're going to find some way. I mean, this is one of Krishna's points to Arjuna. He says, Arjuna, you're a warrior by nature. You are going to fight. That's what you're going to do. Your choices are to do it properly or improperly. Your choices are not to do it or not do it. That's not really the choice that's going on here. So if one of these is at the top two of your list, you're going to find a way to get it. Now you may get it improperly. You may get it in a way that's disturbing to others. You may get it in a way that's not really what you need and may cause you a lot of inner conflict. But you will try to get it. And the same thing is going to happen with the fields, which we'll discuss in depth on Thursday, which I think is the most like, whoa, understanding, where you see that if you work in another field, you're going to bring your dharma into that other field and it's going to make a mess. You won't stop having your particular dharma. It will be there. It's like if you mix up salt and sugar, it's not going to change. It's right. You put salt instead of sugar into a cake. It's not going to say, "Oh, I'm in a cake. I'm going to become sugar." You know? So when we go to do someone else's work, we bring ourselves there, and we'll manifest our dharma there, and it doesn't belong there. And why do we do that? I mean, someone else convinced us to, or we thought we should, or we thought it would make more money, or we went through some kind of trauma where we thought there was something wrong with being who we are. That we have to stop being who we are. Is there someone who could give me a piece of paper since I don't have a flip chart? I should have brought one with me. But you went from scarcity to abundance. Okay, so I'm just going to do this on a piece of paper. But I wonder if I could have a victim, a volunteer, who would... what I'd like to do is demonstrate something which we have. We have also an exercise in the back. I think it's Appendix B, which you're not really ready to do yet. But in Appendix B, it's a self-evaluation for both the prosperity types and the fields. And we do suggest you do this one little exercise for prosperity types. So I want to demonstrate it here, if there's anybody who would be willing to demonstrate this. Is there anybody who would be willing? It won't hurt, and you can sit in your seat. All right. So if you could please tell me what you think are your prosperity types in order of importance.
Probably direct is the first
one. Okay.
Varya is the second one.
Okay.
Then probably Shri.
All right.
I'm forgetting the different ones. There we go. Thank you. This is for my work specifically, right? Yeah. Probably then next, Yasha.
Okay.
Then Jnana, and then Virya.
Okay. I'm going to go to a completely different slide. I'm just going to go there. Okay. So without, and you can't see this because it's just on a piece of paper, because I don't have a flip chart, which is my own fault for not requesting one at first. Okay, if in your work you had to decide between Gyan and Virya, you could only have one, just Gyan or just Virya, what would you choose?
I'd actually probably choose Virya.
Okay. If in your work you had to choose between Yasha and Virya, you could only have one, what would you choose?
Probably Yasha.
Okay. If you could only have Shri or Yasha, you couldn't have both. You could only have one. What would you choose?
I would say Shri.
Okay. If you had to choose between Aishwarya and Shri, you couldn't have both. What would you choose?
Aishwarya.
All right. If you could only have Vairagya or Aishwarya, you couldn't have both. What would you choose?
Vairagya.
Okay. So we only had one change here. Sometimes we have three or four changes. And I've had one case where we had none. Right? So this is yours. Now what you're going to find is that the top two, maybe three, are really important. That if you don't have the top two and maybe three, you really won't be able to function much. Okay, so I think we can end here. And tomorrow we're going to be at where again? In where?
Papakura.
Okay, everybody has that information? Okay, and that'll be again on the nature of the fields, which is a different way of looking at organizing ourselves, and then the nature of the people in the fields. So thank you very, very much. Anything good here is from Srila Prabhupada, anything bad here is from me. You can't even blame the bad stuff on my co-author, it's all mine. So please take the good and put aside the bad. Thank you. Hare Krishna.